Good morning and welcome to the Wannabe Hunting Podcast. This is your host, Amos Medford. Thanks for tuning in today. We're excited to have Tracy Rogers, the field staff manager for Bow Addicts, on the program today. Tracy is an awesome guy and he was fun to talk to. I think you'll pick up a lot of good tips and tactics for the woods and for shooting your bow with Tracy. He does everything from semi-professional 3D archery tournaments to, of course, bow hunting, which is his passion. So hope you guys enjoy this one. Big thanks to Tracy for coming on. Definitely check out Bow Addicts and all that they have going on, some really cool stuff. We appreciate y'all supporting and tuning in and leaving ratings and reviews, commenting on Instagram, all that good stuff. We appreciate it. Hope you guys have a great day and good luck in the field. I am headed out hunting right now, so hopefully we can get the job done today. But thanks for tuning in to the Wannabe Hunting Podcast. Well, if you could just give us a quick, bio, background, how you got into hunting and, kind of where that's brought you today.
All right. Well, I live in Southwest Arkansas. It's hot and muggy most of the time here, with large amounts of mosquitoes. And as a little boy, I got a BB gun when I was, 5 or 6 years old and shot cans, and then progressed from shooting tin cans in the backyard to pretty much killing anything that a BB gun would kill. Lizards, frogs, birds, squirrels, rabbits, you name it. If I could find something, I was going to kill it. And So that kind of started where I began hunting stuff. And then it progressed into, I think I started bow hunting when I was 14. My mom had bought me a little, I call it a plastic bow. It was a legit compound bow, but it seemed like it was made out of plastic from Kmart. I don't even know if it had a specific brand on it, but so I started hunting with that, and I gun hunted through some of my teen years, and then as I got a little bit older, I pretty much just started bow hunting exclusively and have for, I don't remember when the last time I killed something with a rifle.
Oh, wow.
So that's kind of what got me going. And then, I used to duck hunt some. I used to hunt squirrels and rabbits, but I predominantly hunt whitetails now. If I'm not hunting, bow hunting, I'm shooting 3D or indoor archery or something like that. It's pretty much 365 archery for me.
Right. Yeah, that's awesome. This is actually the first year that I've really tried archery hunting, and been out a couple of times, hadn't had any success as far as taking an animal yet, but I've had a lot of people tell me, once you start with the archery thing, it gets pretty consuming.
Oh, it can. There's a lot involved in it. It's one of them deals you can, for me, it's you get it out what you put in. It seems like the older I get, the more I put in, the more I get out of it. And it's not just about, killing the biggest thing in the woods, although that's fun, but just putting in the prep work, whether it's shooting the bow or buying new equipment or fixing the equipment that you have or scouting a new piece of land, hunting with friends, that's a big thing I like to do too, is sharing memories with others and maybe taking them out and showing them something that they've never experienced that I've got to experience before is also very rewarding as well.
Yeah, that's awesome. I can just barely relate, but because I've only been hunting a few years, but I've actually taken my brother-in-law hunting a couple of times, and so it's pretty cool to take somebody out there who's never been,
and just get a chance to see some animals and whatever. Just be out there in the woods.
Definitely.
Yeah, that's awesome. Definitely. So I know you you said you're in southeast Arkansas, is that right?
Actually southwest. I'm over southwest. On the Texas, Louisiana, Oklahoma border. I can pretty much drive to any of those states within 30 minutes. I can be in any state, and we actually live in Texarkana, which is a twin city. It's half of it's Texas and half of it's Arkansas, so it's kind of unique.
Yeah, that is unique. Is there a river splitting it, or?
No, there's actually just a state line. Now, there is the Red River does split a lot of Texas and Arkansas, as well as Oklahoma, too.
Okay, I gotcha. Being in that type of situation where you're right there, do you primarily hunt Arkansas there, or how far do you venture out as far as hunting other states and other areas?
Yeah, so I typically hunt Arkansas, and I'll hunt anywhere in the state. I've been over to the southeast side, up in the northeast. Like I said, I live in the southwest, so obviously I stomp a lot of the public grounds down in this area. But depending on, what hunts I get drawn for that are out of state may depend on where else I go hunt at in the state. But I like to hunt out of state at least once or twice a year. Last year we went to Indiana and to Kentucky, and had a lot of fun up there. I like to hunt Illinois some. I haven't made it over to Missouri, but that's on my bucket list to do, and I want to try to get up to Ohio some.
Nice. That sounds awesome. I've heard a lot of people, Illinois keeps coming up when I'm talking to people.
Illinois is it's a fun state to hunt because you just never know what's going to come out of the thicket up there. So it's obviously got a lot of the genetics that it needs to produce the big type of deer that really gets your heart thumping pretty good.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, you're at home or heading out of state or whatever, what kind of, scouting are you getting into? These days, most everybody's looking at maps or some type of app on their phone, checking ahead. Do you do a lot of that or a little of that? And kind of what strategy do you take when you're trying to plan a hunt? Whether it's somewhere you've been or not, kind of where do you start?
Definitely. I like to use Onyx, and also use the Google Earth maps. The one, I don't remember which one it is. I don't know if it's Pro or whatever, but there's they have it where you can actually go back and look at old aerial photos. Even as far back as like 1999 or something like that. I don't remember how they go back, but it goes back for several years. And I like to look at those because that particular system shows aerial photos at different times of the year. And where if you're looking at a picture that was taken, say, in August, chances are you're just looking at a green map, if it's an aerial photo. Whereas if you look at a map of a picture that was taken in, say, January, where the foliage is off, it allows you to see where the thick cover is, what's still there and what's open. I mean, actually, if it's like an oak patch or something like that, once the leaves fall off, you can almost like see the ground. And so that it's probably not thick in that area. Now, that's on an aerial photo. Obviously, it doesn't necessarily show you topography. So I like to use, there's a couple different apps and internet websites that you can go to for different topography, which down here in Southwest Arkansas, there's not much topography to look at. It's flat. It is flat. So the deer down here where I'm at, you know, they use water features, you know, lakes, different things like that, maybe clear cuts or thickets to maneuver around. So it's not necessarily, that's when that aerial photo really helps me out to find a pinch or some kind of funnel that's making a deer be hopefully in a certain area, or at least starting to congregate there, so I can focus. And then actually, once I kind of locate a handful of those spots, you know, I'll drop pins on my Onyx or whatever it is I'm using, and then I go check it out. And I'll, once you get there, then you either confirm, hey, yes, this is what I thought it was, and then start narrowing down, hey, you know, well, if the wind's blowing in this direction, I need to hunt over here, because sometimes you might find a perfect spot, but you have that only one random wind each year, you know, right. Maybe it's an east wind that's not predominant in my area, that so you may find some good spots, but then you find out I can't really hunt it because the wind direction and whatnot. So right. When I'm going out of state and I'm looking at some new land that maybe I've never put boots on the ground, you know, I rely heavily on maps to look at and again locate things that I want to go see. So when I get there, I don't have a lot of time. I may be on a 5-day or a 7-day or a 9-day hunt, and I don't like to spend 2 or 3 days of it just scouting when I can do a lot of that before I ever get there, just using my phone or a computer.
Right.
And again, locating things that I know I like to hunt. Everybody's a little different. You know, I like to hunt where it's thick. That's where I've been successful. Mm-hmm. That's what I'm looking for is thick areas. And once I get there, once I actually get my boots on the ground, again, I'm just confirming whether I'm looking for rubs or scrapes or trails, anything that's going to indicate, you know, there's deer in the area, it's fresh, and that's what I'm there for. Because especially like out of state where I don't have access just to drive around and look, I may be looking at a photo or an aerial photo or something on Onyx, for example. And once I get there, I found out, hey, that was clear cut 2 months ago. And so, you know, then I've got to scratch that whole idea and start looking at something different. So I try to locate several spots before I ever get there. And again, once I get them boots on the ground, I'm going straight to them spots, try to confirm it, and then get out of there.
Right. Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense, like what you're saying about looking at maps from the certain time of year, you know, what you can tell. But I'm glad to hear you say, like, one of the first things you said was that it's hot, and I was definitely glad to hear you say it's flat where you're at, because here in Northeast Florida, you know, it's warm, and, you know, this past week, we've been, you know, like mid-80s to high 60s, and, you know, we're all unpacking sweaters and everything, you know.
Right.
So, and it is extremely flat. So that's definitely, you know, definitely good to hear. But using, I guess, a lot of focus on water and, you know, what's thickest, stuff like that is kind of big things that stand out to you.
Yeah. You know, and if I'm hunting early season, obviously food source is pretty key. The other thing, when you're hunting early season, there's still a lot of foliage on everything. So it's kind of thick, where if you go up to the first part of November or mid-November, depending on where you're hunting at, you know, there may not be much foliage left in the trees. There may not be that much ground cover left. You know, because most of the stuff has died off. So that's why I'm saying that the thickets, or thick terrains, you know, whether it's honeysuckle patches or, holly trees, stuff like that, where the deer like to feel safe at, And, you know, if I'm hunting early season where food source is my thing, you know, it's for me, I'm looking for white oak trees right now. If I can find one that's dropping, I've got a very short time frame to hunt it, for one, because they won't last long. And down here where I'm at, I've got another issue I've got to deal with, the hogs. So if I find a tree that's dropping, chances are them hogs are probably going to beat me there, and they sit at the bottom of them trees like vacuum cleaners, just sucking everything up. And the deer, you know, they know this too. They may come into the area, and there may not be any acorns there because the hogs already sucked them up, so they're bumping onto the next tree, you know.
Right.
So it's really crucial for me to find something early season if that's my goal.
Okay, I gotcha. Yeah, the tree I was sitting in Saturday was actually raining acorns, but it was not a white oak. I couldn't tell. I tried to look it up. I couldn't tell exactly what kind it was, but it definitely wasn't white. But I still look at that as a good sign.
Oh, definitely. You know, they I think from what I've seen and witnessed, you know, through hunting for a while, is they prefer white oaks, but they will eat the others because there may not be any white oaks in your area.
Right.
And just because there's a white oak tree doesn't necessarily mean it's going to produce that year. And if it does produce, sometimes the acorns aren't any good. So there's a whole lot of factors there, you know, to know. And I guess drop pins. That's something else I like to do, is I like to drop that pin when I find these trees. And that way I know next year I'm going back there again and checking, seeing, hey, yeah, this is going to be a good tree or not this year.
Right. Yeah, for sure. And we've already talked some about, you know, scouting and prep and everything. But are you using some trail cameras and things like that as well?
Absolutely. You know, that's part of the fun for me now. used to, obviously, before they come out with these cell cams, you know, you'd go put a handful out, however many you can afford, or you feel like you can run, because I found that I've had too many cameras sometimes, and it literally takes like a half a day just to go change either batteries or pull cards out, and you run home and you check them, you know, and you're hoping that your SD card worked, and you're hoping something didn't happen. And now you got these new cell cams, which I run the Tacticam Reveals. And that's a different animal, because it's like, boom, yeah, deer just walk by, you know, and
yeah.
You get several of them out, and you get to really see what's going on in your woods right then. So something else I like to do is, if I get a picture, like say it's a buck in a midday, and he's out there eating or just cruising by, I'll flip over to one of my moon phase apps just to look to see what the primary feeding time was, and see if it correlates with, hey, I just got a picture of this deer out there feeding, and lo and behold, it's the same as the you know, the moon phase feeding time frame. It's kind of cool to look at stuff like that, where if you didn't have the cell cam, you know, you're having to go back and look at dates and try to figure that out, versus I can just look at it today.
Yeah, absolutely. That's awesome. Very cool. I've had like a little cell adapter on one of my cameras, and it was pretty cool just to get some like real-time updates and stuff like that.
Yeah, it is. It is pretty cool to see that.
I can see where it would be, you know, like almost addicting to get like go all cell cameras and just keep getting those pictures in.
Yeah, it might drive me crazy too. You know, yeah. You get too many, and then you're like, I'm gonna go to this stand today, and then you're sitting on your stand, and all of a sudden, you know, the buck you was looking for showed up at the other stand, and I don't know.
I can see that would drive you. That would drive you crazy. And if you didn't have those cell cameras, you'd never know, and it wouldn't bother you.
Right.
But that's crazy. But, you know, kind of continuing, we've been talking about scouting and, like, you know, prep for season, that type thing. Obviously, a big part of that, is your bow set up and your arrow set up, and of course practicing. And I know, you know, for you, you said the archery thing is pretty much a, you know, 365 days a year. But could you talk just a little bit, you know, about your bow setup, your arrow setup, stuff like that? And,
absolutely.
You know, we can go from there.
Okay. Yeah. So I've been shooting an Expedition MX-16. I'm going on my second year with it. I'm actually waiting on, X-33 now. I'm hoping I'll have it in a couple of weeks. I shot it back at I think Foley or Paris, one of the ASA national shoots. I shot one, and it's a nice bow, so I'm really looking forward to getting it. But So my current setup, like I said, is an MX-16. I think I'm shooting about 64 pounds. I shoot a 452 grain Black Eagle Rampage era. And I shoot the Magnus Black Hornet Sir Razor or the Magnus Snuffer SS, both in the 125 grain. I've been shooting them for several years now, and I really like that broadhead. It shoots good out of my setup. I feel confident with it. It's done everything I need out of my broadhead to do. I run HHA Tetra and a Tetra Max on my bows. I really like that sight. It's easy to set up, easy to adjust. HHA is a phenomenal company. I don't know if you ever had a chance to check them out, but they got,
yes, sir,
HHA Sports and HHA USA, you know, and but Chris just got a great organization going on with that. So that's, I really like being a part of something like that where they are supporting the veterans at the level that they do. It's great to see them get out and do that. So I shoot gas bowstrings. I've been shooting them for several years, and I shoot them on my tournament rigs also, where, and I think that's where they proved themselves to me, was, you know, I shoot daily, sometimes twice a day with my tournament bow, and for those strings to last 2 years with the amount of shots that they go through, and is just was amazing to me. So I knew then I was on the right. I had a good setup going with them also. So,
right. Yeah, that's
pretty much my hunting setup right there.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, I've heard, you know, Chris Hamm on several other podcasts and stuff, and definitely seems like they have some awesome stuff going on with HHA and, you know, all the stuff they do for veterans and stuff. That's really cool. So they're definitely on my list when I upgrade my site. I'm definitely looking to move to an HHA. So that's, yeah, awesome.
You know, they have the, I shoot the Virtus also, their rest. It's probably one of the easiest rest I've set up. Mm-hmm. You know, it's easy to get dialed in, and I haven't had zero issues whatsoever out of that Virtus.
That's awesome. Good to hear for sure. I haven't done a ton of working on bows, you know, so hearing stuff like easy to set up is definitely good news for me.
Yeah, it's, you know, it used to working on bows was, you know, you had to really tinker with them. Now it's, especially with these dropaways and stuff like that, it's they're a lot more forgiving for me anyway. You know, I've made some investments. I used to have to take my equipment to archery shops all the time, and you know, when I'm trying to tune, it wasn't always as practical as I wanted it to be. You know, maybe it was late in the night and the bow shop was closed, or maybe it was a Sunday afternoon after church and I couldn't get there, and So I just made some investments and started basically putting it together one little bit pieces at a time, where now, you know, I've got my, I can build my own arrows. You know, I got a bow press. I can tune my own stuff. I built me a little serving jig. So in case I need to reserve something, bought a few little, levels and stuff to put on there to set, you know, your second axis, your third axis on your side, those little things like that, that you see people talking about it or hear about it, and you're like, man, I just don't have that type of equipment. I can't do that. Or I don't know what to do. And it's a little bit, you know, for somebody just coming in, it's kind of, a little scary, because you're like, man, I don't know what to do, and I don't want to mess my stuff up. You may have,
right,
you know, several hundred dollars in, invested plus all your time, and you're like, oh, I don't want to mess it up. I don't want to make it worse. But once you kind of learn what to do, you know, that may be the difference between you hitting your target or you're not hitting your target, just basically with your equipment being set up for you appropriately, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, and that's a good point. You know, if you kind of invest along the way and get a piece here and a piece there before you, you know, before you know it, you have it kind of built up. And, you know, I was reading some bow reviews the other day where a lot of the newer bows, you know, like I said, I'm definitely not an expert, but you can adjust the poundage and draw length and all kind of stuff without a bow press, you know, just how the cams are designed and everything. You can just do it with an Allen key, and that's pretty crazy.
It is, you know, the technology's come a long ways in archery. You know, it's still nice to have some of those other things, because although you might be able to say, for example, like on an expedition, I may be able to adjust the draw stops or adjust the adjust my draw length and stuff like that, and obviously, you know, I can adjust the poundage, but it may be I don't have the equipment to set the timing on it. So it's not just always about that. And that's where it gets a little bit more in depth, when you get the timing, but that's also where the accuracy comes in too, you know?
Right. For sure. Yeah. That starts getting a whole different deal, but, that's awesome though. On your arrows, do you do like any extra weight up front? I know you said 125 grains on the, broadheads, but do you need, you know, extra inserts or anything like that?
I have not. The Rampage actually has a stainless steel half out. And what that is mm-hmm. it's got, instead of the typical insert that goes all the way in, basically flushes up with the end of your arrow, this is about halfway in and halfway out. And like I said, it's stainless steel versus aluminum. And right. I think they weigh 52 grains or 54 grains, where just an average insert might weigh like 14 grains. So I'm getting extra weight up front to kind of tip my FOC over just a little bit. I'm not one of those guys that need to shoot a real heavy arrow. I've found, you know, shooting 3D and stuff like that, you know, you can change your grains just a little bit. And if you have a heavier arrow or a lighter arrow, and if you didn't adjust everything else and know exactly the distance, that could be the difference between you missing, making a bad shot, or whether you make a harvest. You know, for me now, I'm, you know, if somebody wants to shoot a 800 grain arrow, then so be it. I'm proud for you. You know, that's right. Good. Whatever makes you happy. That's the beauty with America and bow hunting, is you can do whatever you want to do. If you want to pull a 100-pound bow, then if your shoulder can handle it, good luck. you know, if you all can pull 40-pound bow, then great. You still get to go hunting, you know, depending on what state and your laws are. As long as you're legal, you know, that's what matters. And for me, on an arrow build, is I want to achieve the most penetration I can with the most accurate arrow that I can build. So it's not just one-sided. It needs to be everything. Now, at 20 yards, you can take an out-of-tune bow and almost any era and set it up for 20 yards and hit probably pretty close. It's when you kind of start getting further back where those things will show up and show, hey, you know, I missed that yardage, you know, and you may have a range finder, and that's fine. As long as your deer stands still exactly how far it is every single time and you know where it's at and that range is, then it doesn't matter really what you're shooting. As long as you can hit it, you're going to kill it. But it's when that buck comes in there running and you think it's 37 yards when in fact it was 44 yards and you shot a heavy arrow, and then you're sitting there looking at yourself going, man, I just shot the dirt at its foot. Well, that's why, because your arrow is going to drop more, and that's facts.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, there's all kinds of scenarios that happen when you're hunting, so it's definitely. Having a setup that's going to be all around as far as accurate and you know, penetrates well seems like the way to go. I mean, obviously no situation is perfect, but that gives you the best chance.
Right. And that's what I'm looking for. I need the best chance that I can get for me and, you know, the way I hunt to make sure that if I do send that arrow, I want it to hit what I'm aiming at, and I'm not just praying that I made a good shot. You know, I've got confidence that I can do it also.
Yeah, absolutely. That's awesome. And how, like, as far as the 3D, is it your competition stuff? Is it mostly 3D?
Yeah, I shoot predominantly 3D. I shoot ASA because I'm in the South, so that's what's pretty popular down here is ASA, whereas like up north, it's more of IBO. We don't have any IBO tournaments down here, so we're pretty much all ASA.
Right.
And I shoot in a semi-pro division where it's all unknown out to 50 yards. So, you know, we're having to judge animals, whatever that particular 3D target is. And then, you know, you set your sight to what you think and judge that target's at and hope you're right. Cause like I was saying, if you're a couple yards off, you know, where we might be shooting at on these 3Ds, they have a 12 ring, a 10 ring, an 8 ring. And then, you know, everything else is a 5.
Right.
You know, you might be shooting at the 12 ring. And if you're and that's a smaller target, like a Wolverine or something, and you're a yard and a half off or 2 yards off, so you shot shooting at a 12 and you just made a 5. Well, you do that too many times and people start, you know, leaving you in the dust because you're back there shooting 5s and they're shooting 10s and 12s.
Yeah, for sure. That's crazy. I've never really shot 3D. I wouldn't say there's nowhere around here, but it's not predominant in this area. I was something I would like to try, but of course, I would definitely want to have marked yardages or rangefinder or something. But I can see that would be extremely challenging. Just the ranging.
Yeah, that's part of the fun I enjoy. They do have, you know, known divisions, and those guys there just, man, they shoot a bow. They're so accurate. I don't even know if I can shoot a rifle as accurate as some of those guys are in the known division. They kill it, man. They just can see stuff that I'm old. My eyes aren't that good. I'm like just hoping I'm shooting at a 10, you know?
Right. Yeah, exactly. Just, you know, I'd be happy to hit the target.
Yeah. You know, sometimes I am.
Yeah. That's pretty cool. How many tournaments a year are, I don't know what the best way to quantify it, but you know, how much of that type stuff are you doing?
So in the winter, like December and January, I'll try to shoot indoor some just to kind of start getting some reps in and some competition, and then we typically start our national events in Foley, Alabama in February, and then they'll have the ASA will have like one tournament a month almost to the end of July, and they skip a few months in there, but for the most part there might be five or six national events, and then of course they have, you know, your state level events also, where I may just be shooting like club events here in Texarkana or some of the surrounding cities, and they'll have that little thing. They might shoot once a month, but you know, there's four of them, so I can literally shoot a tournament every weekend if I want to.
Oh, okay. Very cool.
I just have to drive to do it.
Right. Yeah. I'm sure it doesn't always work out, but no, that's definitely cool that there's at least a lot of opportunity for it. But
there's definitely opportunities. It's just, you know, fitting it in with the rest of life. You know, I've got two little girls. One of them plays soccer, another one runs cross country. So there's always something going on every weekend.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. That's awesome. I'm going to see what advice you might have for a new hunter or an inexperienced hunter. And then we'll kind of get into what you have going on with Bow Addicts. But, you know, what advice would you have, whether it's specific to hunting or a tactic or a piece of gear or just a mindset, you know, anything, you know, that you would say to a new or inexperienced hunter?
Well, you know, most of the time when I have guys that I introduce to hunt, I kind of break it down in two things. There's equipment and then there's hunting. So control what you can control. All right. You can't control the weather, and you can't necessarily, especially if you're hunting on public land, you can't control other hunters. What you can control is your equipment. You know, you're in charge of that. Mm-hmm. You got to be able to make sure that you can buy the best that you can buy. And when I say the best, I mean, you know, quality, something that is going to be reliable. You know, so you're not just constantly buying new stuff or worried about it breaking or you bump it or whether you're riding on a four wheeler and it rattles loose or whatever your situation is, control what you can control. Mm-hmm. And develop and practice for it being the most proficient. Okay. So some people are like, oh man, I shoot 150 arrows a day. Well, that's good. Okay. Mm-hmm. But I haven't seen anybody, and if there is somebody that gets to shoot 150 arrows a day while they're hunting, I'd like to go on that hunt with them because that would be a blast. You know, the reality of that is you're going to get one arrow on one hunt. Typically, sometimes you get, you know, you might miss and get another arrow, but I'm just being statistics on that would be, you know, normally you get one chance. So you need to make that one chance count. So when you practice with that type of mentality of I got to make this arrow count. Now, that doesn't mean I'm just going to go shoot one arrow, but instead of me shooting 150, I'm really trying to focus and work like, what did I do wrong? How can I fix that? What's going to be better? And then the other thing is learning what, as far as my equipment is concerned, learning what my ability is. So my ability might be, you know what? I'm only accurate out to 30 yards. So if I'm only accurate to 30 yards, why am I trying to shoot at something at 45 yards and then I'm mad or I'm sad when I gut shot the animal and I didn't find it? Well, you didn't have any business shooting at that animal at 45 yards anyway. If you can't hit it at practice, I promise you can't hit it out in the woods. Right. You know, so that's what I tell people. Stay within your comfort zone, what you're accurate at, and hopefully it's 40 yards or whatever you want to be able to shoot.
Right.
But know what your equipment can do. And then, you know, on the hunting side of it, advice wise is there is nothing better than time in the woods. Not only is it relaxing and fulfilling, but just walking around, seeing animals and learning where they are and why they're there. You know, you may see the signs on the side, for example, like on the side of a field, and there may be 15 scrapes down through there. Well, then you go hunt there for 10 days and you don't see anything. And you're like, man, but there's scrapes everywhere. The sign's there. That's what they told me to do, is go find this, go find that. And I found that, but I don't see no animals.
Right.
Well, they're doing it at nighttime. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's about learning what the animals are doing and why they're there, when they're there. You know, like a thicket, for example, or the side of one. You know, you're seeing droppings under trees. They're fresh droppings, or whether they're old. But it's about learning. For me, I want to be at the freshest sign that I can find to hunt at that time frame.
I appreciate kind of the thought there of knowing what your equipment can do and, you know, practicing for what you want to do and can do, I guess, you know, kind of practically.
Exactly. You know, not getting out of your zone. You got to stay in your zone, because if you do, you kind of stretch it. I mean, nobody wants to wound an animal. Everybody wants to shoot one. Nobody wants to wound one and not find it. But we all get in that situation where maybe the season's getting close, and you know, it's through a cedar tree or something like that. And you're like, oh man, I got to shoot it or I'm not going to get it. Well, yeah, but is that going to be a productive shot, you know?
Right.
And it's not always that way.
Yep, for sure. That's a good thing to keep in mind. Cause it, I mean, I can only imagine, you know, I kind of know what my range is just from the, you know, I've only been shooting and practicing for a pretty short time. And, you know, pretty much if it's beyond 30 yards, I can't mess with it. But, you know, I can just imagine, you know, a big buck standing at 40 yards, I'm going to be dying. But to your point, as bad as I would feel, I'd feel worse if I put a bad shot on it, you know.
Exactly. And that's exactly my point. And that is hard to do, you know, is to stay there and be like, oh, well, I'm just going to try it. Well, you might not even have a 40 yard pin. You might not have ever shot 40 yards, you know, but then again, you might. I mean, you can change that distance to fit anybody, you know. And I mean, there's people that shoot elk at 100 yards. I mean, I'm not saying it's necessarily limited, it's just limited to each individual knowing what their effective range is. That's a very important.
Yep. For sure. Absolutely. Well, you know, kind of before we close it out, I just wanted to give you a minute to talk about Bow Addicts and, you know, what you do with, you know, kind of work with them and everything. And, you know, anything you want to say on that. I know, like I said at the very beginning, I saw the, you know, shirts and designs and stuff a good while back, and I was really impressed. And then when I finally ordered, you know, some stuff, it was definitely great quality and everything like that as far as the clothing itself. But, you know, just from talking to you and a little bit of interaction with Chad, you know, it's definitely more than just some cool shirts.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. So I just kind of tell you the story how I stumbled across them, because I'm sure there's, you know, a lot of similar people same way. I was actually looking for something different, mm-hmm. and I was looking for a boat part, and Chad Davis, the owner of Bow Addicts, he actually was selling something, and he was, you know, some of these forums you go to, Archery Talk and different places, they, you know, you trade stuff and sell stuff. And anyway, he's like, man, I'd already sold it, but hey, I got some over here that if you want to look at them, be interested in. So I go to his website, to the Bow Addicts website, and I'm looking for this bow part, which was what I was actually therefore, and I seen these shirts, and I was like, man, I like that. That's pretty cool. I'd not seen any bow shirts, archery shirts, that had any type of Christian base to it. So I really kind of looked at it. I was kind of like you. I bought one. And then when I got it home, and it wasn't just a, you know, the old cotton t-shirt. It was a nice quality shirt. And it was something I was really proud of to wear. Right. And the more that I started checking them out and finding out what Bow Addicts was about, you know, I was like, oh, I'm going to get behind this. This is something that this is bigger than just an archery shirt or, hey, look at me shirt. There's more to this. And so over the next couple of months and years, me and Chad actually became, you know, really good friends, and had started up a field staff program. And so I applied for it, and I was selected to be on the field staff. And then as that continued to grow, I kind of took on the role of being a field staff manager for him, so that now I'm pretty much, he can focus on, you know, the Bow Addicts and the apparel side of it, and selling stuff, creating new designs, mission trips, or whatever it is that he's doing, versus, you know, having to worry about picking up field staff and stuff like that. So I kind of was trying to help him out in that aspect of, hey, I can handle this for you. Just tell me what you want. Tell me what you need, and we'll go do it. So over the past several years, we've got up to, you know, like 30 field staff. And that's all over the United States. We've got people anywhere from the West Coast all the way to the East Coast, Florida, up north. We got Canada. We have people overseas, over in Dubai. It's really become way more than a hoodie or a hat or a t-shirt. It's become a brotherhood. Mm-hmm. And what has brought us all there together was a couple of things that we all have in common. First and foremost, you know, we love Jesus, our Christ, our mm-hmm. Lord and Savior. Is that's what brings us there to start with. And then, right. you know, we all have family values. We love our country, and we're all bow addicts. You know, that's what we hunt with. I mean, some people still gun hunt, but, you know, for the most part, we're there, and archery is what brought us together. And, over time, Chad and I's relationship has grown, and a lot of our field staff guys, and we'll go on, you know, hunts together. We'll meet up somewhere and go on a hunt. And just hang out. It's an awesome adventure we've been on.
Yeah, that's really cool. And you need to get Bubba Crosby to get you on some Osceolas one of these days.
I know. I do. But me and Bubba's going. I'm going to exchange some turkey hunts for some hog hunts or something up here where he can. Come kill some of my hogs too, because he's down there in Florida trying to kill all them hogs. I need to come kill some of these hogs up here in Arkansas.
Yeah, you got to get him to come up there. We've got a bunch down here, a ton down here. But the funny thing is, the two properties I primarily hunt, there's not a lot of them out there. But man, there's some places where they're just overrun, kind of like you're saying up there.
Yeah, we got spots, and it's just. They've lost control. Arkansas right. Game Fish Commission have lost control of some of our areas, and they can't trap them enough to get them back under a regulation where they can kind of regulate them. I mean, they've lost control, and they've lost a lot of land from it.
Yeah, they'll destroy some land for sure.
Yes.
Well, that's awesome. That's really cool. You know how you were totally. Not looking, you know, you're looking for something for your bow, and, you know, ended up, you know, getting to know Chad, and now you're, you know, kind of managing and helping with the pro staff or the field staff. So that's definitely cool. Definitely anybody listening, check out the Bow Addicts stuff. They've got some really cool shirts and hats and hoodies and everything else. There's even some coffee on there. So that's cool.
Yeah, we We'll have different things from time to time. We've had rings. We got mugs. We got arrow wraps, veins.
Mm-hmm.
There's different things, you know, that we'll have from time to time. We may not carry them all the time, but Chad will get a supply of something and something new, you know, just to kind of be fresh with it, you know.
Right.
But yeah, they've got he's on Facebook, obviously Bo Addicts, and on Instagram. We have Bo Addicts page, and then there's the Bo Addicts Nation page on Instagram also.
Mm-hmm. Yep, definitely. Those are definitely good ones to follow along with. So that's awesome. Well, I appreciate once again you taking some time about, you know, bows and hunting and everything. I really enjoyed it, Tracy.
Hey, I did too. I appreciate you having me, and I can talk about archery and hunting just about any day of my life.
Sounds good. We'll have to do it again one time.
I hear you. You have a good season.
Yes, sir.
Thanks again so much for listening to the Wannabe Hunting Podcast with your host, Amos Medford. That's me, the Wannabe Hunter. I really appreciate the support. I really appreciate you taking the time to listen today. Tracy was a great guest. Definitely follow and see what he's doing out there on Instagram, and check out what Bo Addicts has going on. And we really appreciate you coming along with us as we try to learn more about hunting and just enjoy what God's provided for us. So thanks again for listening. And as always, remember, honor God, work hard, and let's keep hunting.